broadcasting from the Taz and Lake Lodge studios.
Sporting Journal Radio.
Sporting Journal Radio. The Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
Welcome to the show. My name is Brett Amundson. Fresh off of Pheasant Fest last weekend. It is show season. We got a lot of shows coming up that we're going to be at. You'll be able to hear more about those coming up later in the show. If you listen to the commercials, I know that's not always everybody's favorite part about shows like this, but if you listen to the commercials, you'll learn about a lot of the shows that are coming up that we're going to be at in the next couple of weeks. But Pheasant Fest last weekend, had a great time, saw a bunch of friends, saw a lot of blaze orange, some full-on blaze orange shoots. Dustin Shores, I'm looking at you, talking to you right now, who then you could see in our brand new Prairie Sportsman episode that aired last week as well. You can see that now at prairiesportsman.org. That was a pretty cool episode on a veterans hunt at the Heartland Preserve in Granite Falls. Also got to hear Randy Newberg speak about public lands and hunting from being in Minnesota. It was a great speech at the banquet, National Pheasants Forever banquet last week. Also got to hear some of the guys like Lantani and Ben Jones and Sam Solholt, see them speak about public lands. And saw Carl Gunzer from Purina. He got up and talked about dogs, and then also saw Daniel Pruitt from Wild and Whole giving a seminar on wild game. It was a very cool event. It'll be in Sioux Falls next year, Pheasant Fest. So if you get a chance, if you haven't been to Pheasant Fest yet, go check it out. All right. And then this week, man, we are on a 9-day filming trip for Prairie Sportsman right now up in Minnesota's Arrowhead region, spending some time in Ely this weekend, chasing wolves around. And then we're also heading over to the Wolf Track Classic sled dog race. It's been going on since 1970. Is that right? Holy smokes. 50 years. That's amazing. So we're going to follow Ryan Miller as he races in that sled dog race and do some dog sledding for trout. And we got to fish up on the Gunflint Trail. We're going to go snowmobiling. It's some very cool stuff that we're filming for Prairie Sportsman. You'll be able to see over the next couple of months on all the PBS stations across the state of Minnesota. All right, this week we're going to talk whitetails and chronic wasting disease. We're going to see what's going on right now in that fight, give you a little update on what's happening. Taylor Bester from Bluffland Whitetails Association down in the southeast will join us. We'll discuss chronic wasting disease and what's been going on in other states versus Minnesota. And then we will also talk to Mike Kempinick. You may think of winter being a time not to be foraging for wild foods, but you'd be wrong. Mike Kempinick tells us what you can go find right now and how you can make beer out of it. He's coming up here on Sporting Journal Radio. Now, this week's show is brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism. Plan your trip to Lake of the Woods at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. It's brought to you by Haybale Heights Campground Resort on Devil's Lake. Haybaleheights.com. Perch in a snow bear and walleyes. By Tazen Lake Lodge. A new episode of Tazen TV just came out. Find that on YouTube or on the Tazen Lake Facebook page or go to tazenlake.com. Trophy Lake Trout, Northern Pike in Saskatchewan. It's brought to you by the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic, March 13th, 14th, and 15th at a new location this year, Canterbury Downs in Shakopee. I'll be there Friday, March 13th from 1 to 3 p.m. in the Outdoor News booth. Stop by and say hi. Then I'm heading over to the Midwest Chapter of the Wild Sheep Foundation, also March 13th and 14th at the Minneapolis Marriott Southwest in Minnetonka. We'll be there at the Tazen Lake Lodge booth. Stop by and say hi. It's brought to you by Prairie Sportsman. New episodes now available at prairiesportsman.org. And Mid-Migration Outfitters offering guided snow goose hunts in Minnesota this year. Go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. Time now for What's New, brought to you by Prairie Sportsman, the Emmy Award-winning show based on Pioneer PBS. Find out where you can watch the show at prairiesportsman.org or watch the episodes now at prairiesportsman.org on YouTube or on our Facebook or Instagram. New episode of Prairie Sportsman this Sunday night. We go walleye fishing in Albert Lea and pheasant hunting near Austin. You can see what kind of outdoor opportunities southern Minnesota has to offer. And then you can learn about the Crow River Trail Guards of Painesville. This is a really neat story that we got to do. You can watch it this Sunday night on Prairie Sportsman on Pioneer PBS. All right, if you ice fish in Minnesota, dark houses, fish houses, and portables must be off the ice no later than midnight. If you're in the southern zone anyway, March 2nd is your deadline to get your house off the lake. March 16th is the deadline if you're north. The Minnesota DNR website has that boundary line. If you're on border waters, Minnesota-Iowa border waters, it's February 20th. If you're on Minnesota-Wisconsin border waters, it's March 1st. If you're on the Minnesota South and North Dakota border, it's March 5th. And the Minnesota-Canadian border is March 31st. After these removal dates, shelters may remain on the ice between midnight and 1 hour before sunrise, only if you're in it. Storing or leaving shelters on a public access is prohibited. In North Dakota, private landowners are reminded that the deadline for the CRP general sign-up is quickly approaching. Applications must be submitted at your farm service agency by February 28th. And the snow goose season, February 22nd, is when the snow goose season opens in North Dakota. Seems kind of early, but was it last year, a couple years ago, that somebody was actually shooting snows on the opener in North Dakota? And I've been hearing about snows into Missouri. Won't be long before they're starting to move into South Dakota, depending on that snow line. Of course, if you are going to hunt snows in the spring in North Dakota, you need to have a valid current season 2019 to 2020 license. That's valid through March 31st, or 20 to 21. That starts April 1st. Combination license or a small game. Resident youth under age 16 only need the general game and habitat license. You can buy the new license starting March 15th. Non-residents need a 2020 Spring Light Goose Conservation Order license. It's $50 invalid statewide, and those that does not count against your 14-day fall waterfowl hunting season regulation. Now here's your North Dakota Game and Fish Outdoors report from Doug Lear. It's brought to you by Hay Bale Heights. Go to haybaleheights.com to plan your trip to Devil's Lake.
Individuals interested in taking a hunter education class in 2020 are reminded to register early, as most classes are held the first few months of the calendar year. Hi, this is Doug Lear with your weekly North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. Interested students must click on the education link at the Game and Fish website, gf.nd.gov. Classes are listed by city and can also be sorted by start date. Classes will be added throughout the year as they become finalized. To register for a class, click on Enroll. State law requires anyone born after December 31st, 1961, to pass a certified hunter education course to hunt in the state. Hunter education is mandatory for youth who are turning 12 years old. Children who turn age 11 during the calendar year can also take the class. That's this week's North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. I'm biologist Doug Lear.
Thank you, Doug. When we come back, we got Mike Kempinick, the gentleman forager, to talk about what you can forage for right now. And also Taylor Bester from the Bluffland Whitetails Association gives us an update on the fight against CWD in southeastern Minnesota. It's all on the way on Sporting Journal Radio.
The best showcase of Minnesota bucks under one roof is back. The Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic is coming March 13th, 14th, and 15th to Canterbury Park in Shakopee. See Michael Waddell and Nick Munt from TV's Bone Collector. Get your antlers scored and visit with over 150 exhibitors. Plus, there's the Wild Trails Kid Zone. Parking is free at the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic. Now at the new location, Canterbury Park in Shakopee. March 13th, 14th, and 15th. Learn more at mndeerclassic.com. That's mndeerclassic.com.
Ice fishing season is here. This winter, plan a trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Not only will you have the chance to catch your legendary perch, but this year, Hay Bale Heights has been catching big walleye after big walleye. And they're doing it from a mobile, comfortable snow bear. No matter how cold it is outside, you're warm and toasty on the inside. Learn more and book a trip today at haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. World-class fishing in a scenic, remote Saskatchewan location can be found at Tazon Lake Lodge. With lake trout catches nearing world record sizes, including a 47-inch by 35-inch giant estimated to be around 70 pounds. See the picture now at TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge will also put you on giant pike. And you can learn more about getting there at the Tazon Lake Lodge booth at the Northwest Sports Show in Minneapolis, April 2nd through the 5th. Or go to TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge is a proud partner with Tourism Saskatchewan. If you want to have success fishing in Minnesota, you have to go where the fish are. And there may be no lake with more fish in it than Lake of the Woods.
Not just big numbers of walleye, sauger, perch, eel pout, pike, muskie, bass, and sturgeon, but numbers of big fish too. Between the Rainy River, the main lake, and the Northwest Angle, you have over 50 resorts to choose from. Guided fishing allows for heated transportation to heated fish houses. Learn how to book a trip now at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Help support conservation efforts Friday and Saturday, March 13th and 14th at the Midwest Chapter of the Wild Sheep Foundation's annual banquet and fundraiser. This year's event features speaking seminars from Ryan Callahan, the conservation director at Meat Eater, and Laramie Sasquatch Miller from The Last of the Breed TV show. This year features a raffle for a stone sheep hunt, plus live music from national recording artist Shane Klaus both nights. Friday and Saturday, March 13th and 14th at the Minneapolis Marriott Southwest in Minnetonka. Learn more at MidwestWildSheep.com. That's MidwestWildSheep.com.
Broadcasting from the Tazen Lake Lodge Studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
Hi, this is Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for tuning in across the network, on demand, sportingjournalradio.com, or by using the podcast. Well, this time of year, it's hard to think about foraging in the wild, but I know there's a guy that we're going to talk to right now that I guaranteed is thinking about foraging every day of the year. So we figured we'd have him on to talk about what you do in the winter months and then how you get yourself ready for the melting into spring and the transition of seasons. So Mike Kempinick joins us now here on Sporting Journal Radio. Mike, how's winter treating you so far?
I'm huddled in a small ball in the corner of my room waiting for spring.
I bet.
It's always a little longer than I'd like, but we'll make it.
Well, what can you do? I want to talk about what a guy can do in the winter time.
Sure.
If he wants to get out there to try to forage, because there's things you can go out and find all year long. So I want to talk about what you can do in the winter. And obviously, then you're probably pretty busy year round with your store at the same time.
Yeah, you know, we always here at our place, we kind of think of fall and winter as, oh, great, we get a little reprieve. But the truth is, that's all the time that needs to be spent to plan for next year. So we're awfully busy as well. But it is, to your point, it is nice to get out in the winter and still enjoy a little bit of foraging. There are there's at least one mushroom here in Minnesota that some people might be familiar with. It's often called chaga,
yes.
Anonitas obliquus, and it grows on about one in every 10,000 birch trees, and has a lot of medicinal properties to it. People typically use it to brew a medicinal tea. And winter's kind of nice because, of course, there's no leaves on the trees, and it's a heck of a lot easier to spot them. There are a lot that, you know, it's kind of a large cankerous growth on the side of the tree. And winter provides a great view to be able to kind of do a little road hunting.
Yeah. So tell people what to look for, or is that available pretty much anywhere you find birch trees?
Yeah. I mean, anywhere that predominantly white birch, although it's sometimes found on yellow birch. And it's really a game of numbers. Like I said, it's about one in every 10,000 trees that might be infected with this fungus. And, it's really just a matter of how many birch trees can you look at before you might find one, which is kind of part of the fun. You know, it's a little bit like an Easter egg hunt.
Sure.
They can grow quite large. I've harvested chaga, as large as 20 pounds. And really you don't need a whole lot to brew your tea. You need a piece about the size of your fist maybe, and that'll brew, 3 gallons of tea or so. So I try, and when I teach classes and such, I try and encourage people that as much fun as it is to forage it, hopefully you'll just take enough to use for yourself. It takes about 5 to 10 years for one of these mushrooms to grow to maturity.
Oh.
And, of course I hate the idea of, you know, people get excited and they go harvest this all, and then it just kind of sits in their garage and never gets put to use. So, it's a great, wonderful thing, wonderful outdoor activity. You can bring the kids and the dog and whatnot. Like anything, I hope people responsibly harvest it.
Talking about chaga right now with Mike Kempinick, the gentleman forager here on Sporting Journal Radio. What does it look like? And when you say only take what you need, if you're looking for a big, this big fungus growing on the side of a tree, how big is it? And can you just like cut out a section of it, or how does that work?
That's actually a really good question. It's so the outer shell of it really looks like burnt wood. It looks precisely like the tree might have been on fire, and this chunk of wood sort of caught, and there's this black shell on it, which is quite hard. And so removing it does become a little bit of a challenge. And I've found that a sort of a flexible blade works pretty well to get in there where it's meeting the tree itself. And the interior of it is much like the consistency of cork. So if you can kind of get around the outside of it and then kind of carve it out of the tree a little bit, you should be able to get her loose. They often protrude quite far. And so depending upon where it is on the tree, if it's, you know, within kicking height, for instance, you might be able to get your foot up there and kind of bust it off. But it can be a bit of a challenge to get them off there, especially if you find it, you know, 15 feet high.
So you cut off some of this chaga, and then how does the processing process go from there? Then you bring some sort of bag to keep it in? Is there a preferred method of transport and storage?
Super easy. You know, when you harvest it, even though it's winter, it's going to have quite a bit of water in as part of it. And so you'll want to bring it home and let it dry for, ideally probably 2 weeks to a month. Hmm. And then it's a real sort of caveman method to kind of refining it, because it's so hard. You really got to be careful about what you wouldn't want to drop this into your normal blender at home or something. It would absolutely chew up your blades. But if you have something like an old time meat grinder or something with specialized blades that are heart and steel or something along those lines, you probably could get away with it. Myself, I like to just throw it in a burlap sack and take a hammer to it and just break it up into chunks that I can use.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then after it dries out, you use it to make tea.
Right. So after it's dried, you grab a chunk, like I mentioned, about the size of your fist or maybe even a little smaller. And super easy. You just toss it in a couple gallons of water or maybe as many as 3 gallons of water. Bring it up to a boil. And just as it reaches its boil, just shut off the burner and let it steep overnight. And when you're done, you can store that indefinitely pretty much in your fridge. You can reheat it. You can use it to mix, Kool-Aid or tea or any sort of flavoring component you want. It really has a very light flavor, maybe a slight woodsy note. I often tell people that it kind of reminds me of when you're stopping at a gas station way up north somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and you get that cup of coffee that really doesn't taste a lot like coffee. It's mostly hot water. It's a little like that, which is kind of nice because you can enjoy the medicinal properties of the tea, and it's not, and it's agreeable to drink. It's not something that tastes bad.
So is that something that you filter out? I'm assuming there'd be some chunks in there at that point. Is there?
There really shouldn't be. I mean, there might be, I suppose, if there was some chunks as you tossed it in there or little shavings or whatnot, but it should be, pretty much all tea, and you should have that chunk still sitting in there. And you can actually take that chunk out and, set it on the counter and let it dry out again and use it probably 2 or 3 times. So a piece, the size of your fist, again, you're probably going to make as many as 10 gallons of tea out of something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So do you ever stop and think about when you describe searching for a fungus to ingest? Do you ever sit and think about, what did I just say? I'm looking for a fungus that I'm going to put in. I mean, does it seem kind of strange? So people always worry about with mushrooms, health risks. Is there a health risk with chaga at all?
Well, I mean, like anything you eat, if you were to consume some ridiculous amount of it, there could be some, some effects that are not positive. I mean, you're not going to kill yourself or anything. Although Mike is not a doctor, right? So, but generally speaking, you'd have to consume a great deal of it to have any sort of counter effect. It's often referred to as an adaptogen. So it helps regulate a lot of body function.
Okay. Will I start to see colors or do I?
No, you won't. You won't be tripping. You don't need 10 hours. You can have a cup in the car with you. You can drive and drink. Yeah. It's okay that way. And to your point, I think a lot of people have that. I had somebody write me the other day about a mushroom coffee that we sell, and their comment was something effective. Ooh, I would never want to drink, mushroom coffee. And I had to take a little time to let them know that, hey, it really, there's no mushroom flavor. It's just a great cup of coffee that has the beneficial compounds of the mushroom infused with a process onto the grounds, but it's not a mushroom flavor. It's just coffee. And in this case, same kind of thing where it doesn't taste like a mushroom. It doesn't have any disagreeable flavor. It's just a very light a really rather pleasant woodsy note. I've actually used it to brew beer before.
Mm.
Replaced the hop component with chaga because there's a very slight bitterness to it.
Interesting.
It actually won third place at one of Milwaukee's beer festivals here a few years back.
Oh, really?
And we also had the guys at Clutch Brewery last year brewed us a batch for our Wild Food Fandango that went over quite big. So I just love the idea that I could drink a quote-unquote healthy beer.
Of course. They're all healthy, right?
Right. Meal in every glass.
I want to talk more about the Wild Food Fandango here in just a second, but to finish up with chaga, what's the best time of year to go searching for it?
Right now, really. I mean, right now is, I suppose you could make an argument that a little bit earlier might be better if there is a ton of snow cover, just because it's a little easier to move around in the woods. But really, any time that from the time the leaves are down until the time the leaves are back up again is prime time.
Why wouldn't you be able to go harvest this in the summer?
Well, you absolutely would, and there are occasions that I'll stumble across some obvious chaga. But as I mentioned, it's a bit like grouse hunting. If you're out there before any of the leaves fall, it's pretty tough to get a shot. You know, it's tough to see much. And it's very similar. It's just very difficult to see through the canopy.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about that area where you'd go to find them and maybe where you go to grouse hunt, the northeastern part of the state, because that's where we are right now doing some filming for Prairie Sportsman. And I know you spend a lot of time up there. And I want to talk about as winter melts away to spring, what you can start to look for, when you should go, what you can search for. And then, of course, some of your events that you've got going on this summer with Forest to Fork. It's a gentleman forager, Mike Kempnick, here on Sporting Journal Radio. More with Mike coming up.
Help support conservation efforts Friday and Saturday, March 13th and 14th at the Midwest Chapter of the Wild Sheep Foundation's annual banquet and fundraiser. This year's event features speaking seminars from Ryan Callahan, the conservation director at Meat Eater, and Laramie Sasquatch Miller from The Last of the Breed TV show. This year features a raffle for a stone sheep hunt, plus live music from national recording artist Shane Klaus both nights. Friday and Saturday, March 13th and 14th at the Minneapolis Marriott Southwest in Minnetonka. Learn more at MidwestWildSheep.com. That's MidwestWildSheep.com. World-class fishing in a scenic, remote Saskatchewan location can be found at Tazon Lake Lodge. With lake trout catches nearing world record sizes, including a 47-inch by 35-inch giant estimated to be around 70 pounds. See the picture now at TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge will also put you on giant pike, and you can learn more about getting there at the Tazon Lake Lodge booth at the Northwest Sports Show in Minneapolis, April 2nd through the 5th, or go to TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge is a proud partner with Tourism Saskatchewan.
The best showcase of Minnesota bucks under one roof is back. The Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic is coming March 13th, 14th, and 15th to Canterbury Park in Shakopee. See Michael Waddell and Nick Munt from TV's Bone Collector. Get your antlers scored and visit with over 150 exhibitors. Plus, there's the Wild Trails Kid Zone. Parking is free at the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic. Now at the new location, Canterbury Park in Shakopee. March 13th, 14th, and 15th. Learn more at mndeerclassic.com. That's mndeerclassic.com.
If you want to have success fishing in Minnesota, you have to go where the fish are. And there may be no lake with more fish in it than Lake of the Woods. Not just big numbers of walleye, sauger, perch, eel pout, pike, muskie, bass, and sturgeon, but numbers of big fish too. Between the Rainy River, the main lake, and the Northwest Angle, you have over 50 resorts to choose from. Guided fishing allows for heated transportation to heated fish houses. Learn how to book a trip now at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com. Ice fishing season is here. This winter, plan a trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Not only will you have the chance to catch their legendary perch, but this year, Hay Bale Heights has been catching big walleye after big walleye. And they're doing it from a mobile, comfortable snow bear. No matter how cold it is outside, you're warm and toasty on the inside. Learn more and book a trip today at haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio. Broadcasting from the Tazon Lake Lodge Studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
We're back on the Midwest Radio Home for the Outdoors, Sporting Journal Radio. My name is Brett Amundson. We're talking to the gentleman forager right now, Mike Kempnick, about chaga and things that you can forage for this time of year. When can people start thinking about getting out into the woods and doing some foraging as spring approaches?
Well, every year I have a good chuckle amongst my staff and family and friends, because no matter how many years I've been doing this, every year I go out too early. because we've been holed up so long and it looks so beautiful out there, right? But, you know, it depends on what you're looking for. There's definitely some wild plants that a person can get out for in April. You know, if you're in southern Minnesota, I would say probably about the second week of April, it's worth going out and taking a peek around. If you're kind of around the metro area, you might be looking at the last week of April or so. And up north, funny enough, moving up north, it doesn't really change a whole lot. It's usually about the same time, which is about the third week of April. And then that usually wraps up about mid-May, about the 15th or so. Last year went a little much longer than is typical. I think we picked morels until, just about the beginning of June. But typically it's about a three-week window.
That will get here before you know it. And then as summer goes on and even into fall, you've got something you pretty much, as the calendar rolls on, all right, now it's time to start looking for these, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really what I find rewarding is morels are great and we all look forward to them and they're really delicious. But, you know, that's 2 or 3 weeks. There's a little bit of a lull after that during June is kind of a tough month for mushroom hunters. There are a few mushrooms out like chicken of the woods, or you might find some oyster mushrooms if we have a lot of rain, but it's relatively quiet. And then about the last week of June and the first week of July, then really the mushroom season starts to begin in earnest. And then typically some of the first things we start to see are chanterelles, which of course are really loved the world over. And, you know, the rest of them sort of follow suit. There'll be chanterelles and there'll be oleates of all kinds. Porcini is a name that a lot of people recognize. As we get a little closer to fall and late summer, there's things like yellowfoot and hedgehog. And later in the fall yet, something that until recently we didn't know even grew in Minnesota, matsutake, which is a very prized mushroom around the world, shows up. And things like hen of the woods, maitake, another very delicious mushroom that lots of people probably have looked at. In fact, most people have probably seen one and not knew that they were looking at one. So really from July until the couple of hard freezes, the end of October, even sometimes into early November, mushroom hunting is fantastic. And fall is really the sort of the fullest harvest period, is maybe late August through mid-October, I would say.
You know, and I feel like people think of spring being the main time to do it. Maybe that's just because of the morel mushroom hunt that a lot of people like to do. And then I know a lot of other people are maybe carrying shotguns or deer rifles in the fall when hardcore mushroom hunters are out there. And then you get into winter and you get back to chaga again. And for those of us that don't always have time, maybe we are busy in the fall chasing other things around. And I want to get some of these mushrooms, like say chaga. Do you guys carry, can I come to Forest to Fork and get some chaga?
You can not only come and get chaga to bring home, but there's hot tea or brewing all the time.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Interesting. How about some of that beer?
The beer is upstairs. Clutch is there, but sadly, in fact, it's funny you bring that up. I was just telling one of my guys, hey, we need to go talk to the Clutch guys and see if they want to make another batch of chaga beer.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So they, well, get on that. And that, we'll stop down for some of that that chaga beer. Tell our listeners if they, I mean, obviously we've had you on talking about this before. We did the Prairie Sportsman's story. Tell our listeners about Forest of Fork.
Yeah, so Forest of Fork is our retail arm of our business. So we have Gentleman Forager, which provides wholesale wild food products to the restaurant industry, and retail is Forest of Fork. And we have a really cool store at a place called Kick and Case Market in St. Paul, which used to be the home of the old Schmidt Brewery back in the day. And there we have a 15-foot tall glass fruiting chamber where we grow mushrooms before you.
That's
and
cool.
People can get a great education about how fungus grows and, you know, all kinds of great ideas about what makes them so healthy for you and why we should all be making it part of our diet. And if you're looking for, you know, foraging tools, knives or books or, you know, anything a person might need to get out in the woods and really have fun with it, that's there too, along with a plethora of different wild food products, from berries to nuts to rice to tubers to, you know, it's just a very unique, cool store. And, you know, part of what I'm really proud of is I didn't want it to make it unattainable for people. Part of the idea was people could come, buy enough to go home and make a great meal and, walk away for probably $10 to $20. You don't have to spend an arm and a leg to enjoy that.
Well, I'm glad you brought up education because I wanted to talk about that. I think sometimes it's intimidating for people to go out and try to pick mushrooms if they,
sure.
they just don't know what they're looking for at times. And you actually offer classes for that too, right?
We do. We have our first spring mushroom class. We do three a year and we cover four different species in each class. Our first class happens April 26th this year. And we try and keep them, with the season. So this will cover morels, puffballs, black trumpets, and oyster mushrooms. And we like to have fun, too. We're all about fun. So instead of teaching at the university like I used to do, we now teach at Morrissey's Irish Pub. And we all enjoy a Bloody Mary or two, and we have some great mushroom dishes, a little light lunch. And,
see, I think I would have paid a lot more attention in high school if it had been done at the pub.
I just thought, hey, what would I like to do? It's a little more enjoyable. So that's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Will there be some chaga beer there?
I'm going to try my darndest. I think we might have time. That would be awesome.
Very cool. So classes, you can come down and get some of this stuff, learn a little bit more about these wild edibles and these mushrooms. And then, of course, you have a big celebration in the summertime, Mike.
We do. We have a couple. We have our biggest is the Wild Food Fandango, which takes place Sunday, June 7th at Keck & Case Market. This year we're super excited because we've been sort of getting bigger and bigger. And this year we've retained a place called Sue McLean and Associates, which is a great agency in town, which books some incredible musical acts. They're going to have some great music out here. And 12 of the best chefs in Minnesota are going to be competing to create these incredible wild food dishes. And you get to tell us who the winner is. Everybody gets to vote. And the winner walks away with the Golden Morel Trophy, which is quite coveted, I can assure you. they get to hang on to that for a year and defend it the following year.
Could you imagine finding a mushroom that big?
You've actually seen the trophy, right, haven't you? That's right. It's impressive.
It's very impressive.
Yeah. Yes. We have a couple other ones. We do weekend outings during the August 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. We do our lobster mushroom jamboree, which actually this year is going to take place up on the Iron Range.
Oh, really?
And and it's kind of similar, only very much smaller scale. So we bring about 40 or 50 people, and we bring a couple of bands up there, and we bring a couple of great cooks from the cities, and everybody enjoys some foraging and some great music around the fire and some incredible food. So it's kind of camping, but it's, you're eating well, and you're having a lot of fun. But we pretty much have, just looking at our series of events here, we've gone to about 10 events that take place from spring to fall.
Oh, wow.
And so if people want to take a peek at the website, we'll have them all up there and we'd love to have them join us and find out what all the hubbub's about, because it's, eating healthy shouldn't be distasteful. It should be delicious.
That's right. Well, give us the websites and the Facebook pages and where we can find you all online.
Sure. So we're at forest-fork.com is our website. On Facebook, Gentleman Forager or forest-fork. And that's any one of those are a great way to keep up. You can sign up for a newsletter and we'll keep you informed. And we'd love to have people come join us or join us for a class or join us for an outing or visit us at the upcoming Fandango.
Well, it's very interesting stuff for me. I've just scratched the surface on foraging, and I'm going to be up in that northeastern part of the state here for the next, almost 2 weeks as we film for Prairie Sportsman. So I'm going to keep my eye on some of those birch trees, Mike.
I'll trade you some chaga beer for some walleye fillets when I see you.
That can easily happen, for sure. The gentleman forager, Mike Kempinick, I appreciate the time here on Sporting Journal Radio.
Ice fishing season is here. This winter, plan a trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Not only will you have the chance to catch your legendary perch, but this year, Haybale Heights has been catching big walleye after big walleye. And they're doing it from a mobile, comfortable snow bear. No matter how cold it is outside, you're warm and toasty on the inside. Learn more and book a trip today at haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. World-class fishing in a scenic, remote Saskatchewan location can be found at Tazen Lake Lodge. with lake trout catches nearing world record sizes, including a 47-inch by 35-inch giant estimated to be around 70 pounds. See the picture now at TazzinLake.com. Tazzin Lake Lodge will also put you on giant pike, and you can learn more about getting there at the Tazzin Lake Lodge booth at the Northwest Sports Show in Minneapolis, April 2nd through the 5th, or go to TazzinLake.com. Tazzin Lake Lodge is a proud partner with Tourism Saskatchewan.
Help support conservation efforts Friday and Saturday, March 13th and 14th at the Midwest Chapter of the Wild Sheep Foundation's annual banquet and fundraiser. This year's event features speaking seminars from Ryan Callahan, the conservation director at Meat Eater, and Laramie Sasquatch Miller from the Last of the Breed TV show. This year features a raffle for a stone sheep hunt, plus live music from national recording artist Shane Klaus both nights. Friday and Saturday, March 13th and 14th at the Minneapolis Marriott Southwest in Minnetonka. Learn more at MidwestWildSheep.com. That's MidwestWildSheep.com.
If you want to have success fishing in Minnesota, you have to go where the fish are. And there may be no lake with more fish in it than Lake of the Woods. Not just big numbers of walleye, sauger, perch, eel pout, pike, muskie, bass, and sturgeon, but numbers of big fish too. Between the Rainy River, the main lake, and the Northwest Angle, you have over 50 resorts to choose from. Guided fishing allows for heated transportation to heated fish houses. Learn how to book a trip now at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
The best showcase of Minnesota bucks under one roof is back. The Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic is coming March 13th, 14th, and 15th to Canterbury Park in Shakopee. See Michael Waddell and Nick Munt from TV's Bone Collector. Get your antlers scored and visit with over 150 exhibitors. Plus, there's the Wild Trails Kid Zone. Parking is free at the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic. Now at the new location, Canterbury Park in Shakopee. March 13th, 14th, and 15th. Learn more at mndeerclassic.com. That's mndeerclassic.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio. Broadcasting from the Tazzin Lake Lodge studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, we're back, Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the network by podcast or on demand at the website sportingjournalradio.com. We talked about the roundtable quite a bit here on the radio show, primarily talking more about pheasants and ducks. Didn't really get into the deer or wolf discussion, but a couple of takeaways from that roundtable I want to discuss now with Taylor Bester, the president of the Bluffalo Whitetails Association. Who Taylor, saw you there at the roundtable. What'd you think this year?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Got with all the people I don't get to see a whole lot of throughout the year, but yeah, it was pretty good. I was able to talk, and I thought that went well, and overall, well, it was good.
Well, I wish I would have got to see you speak up there, because I was disappointed in the roundtable this year, and partially it's just because of the design. It's just there's so many different things going on at the same time. You have to pick and choose, and realistically, about out of a, you know, 12 or 15 different breakout sessions, realistically you can get to about three of those. And so I didn't feel like there was enough on deer and chronic wasting disease. I know that's always been a hot topic, so I'm sure they wanted to cover some other things, and it was a big topic at this year's roundtable. I just didn't feel like it was big enough. I don't know. There were a lot of things I felt like could have been bigger topics at the roundtable this year, but it's not. I don't get to plan it, of course, so I'll just go with it. And I had some great conversations in between sessions with people while I was there, which is where I think a lot of the real work gets done. And I was anxious to take part or be a part of the hot topics session, where it was supposed to be about the deer management and also wolf management. That became just an hour-long discussion on wolves, which is kind of a moot point until they make a decision, which hopefully the decision is going to come out in March, it sounds like, which hopefully it the management goes back to the states, which would be nice for our Great Lakes wolves here in Minnesota. So Taylor, I didn't feel like there was enough discussion about chronic wasting disease and where are we at with things? Because it seems like every couple of weeks or once a month or so, something new pops up from anywhere in the state or surrounding states. But of course, down in the Southeast, down there is where things are most prevalent. So where are we at right now down there?
Well, we just started getting the sharpshooters out hunting localized areas to try and get the positive deer off the landscape in the most efficient way.
All right. And that's sharpshooters. Those are federal guys that come in, right?
Yep, USDA certified, that whole deal. They got a nice little setup. We also work with them on getting rid of the hides, the deer hides. That helps with funding the carcass dumpsters. And then we also help with the Share the Harvest program, getting rid of that venison to people that sign up for it.
That's cool. That's good. A lot of questions always remain about chronic wasting disease. And that's the hardest part when you have a discussion about this with somebody who is either, you know, I don't want to use the word denial word, but they're either in denial about the whole thing or they have, you know, they're arguing against some of the methods to fight chronic wasting disease. They say, well, what about this? What about this? And that's the number one issue with chronic wasting disease. There's so many questions out there, but there's been some new research that's been coming out. And I know you and I were talking about some of it off the air a little bit. And I want to get into that, but I wanted to ask you this too. Rick Hansen was sending me a message about transmission when deer are breeding. Have you heard anything about that, of like a buck passing it to a doe through through a breeding session?
I have heard a little bit about it. It was mostly pretty vague along the lines that they had found prions in semen.
Right.
And now that's probably, you know, labbed up, amplified, but they are finding it there. I mean, it's hard to believe that that's not the biggest transmitter.
Right.
When you're looking at the bucks having the most prevalence going from doe group to doe group. I mean, that seems like the easiest way to spread it, but that's just an educated guess, I guess.
Sure. Well, that's interesting. I mean, you talk about a transmission nose to nose or like a fluid contact or something. Well, that's a pretty big fluid contact. You'd think that,
would be
a transmission form. And then, the focus on the fight against CWD have been primarily on bucks because of their ranging and the fact that they might travel a little bit more. But you heard about some research where maybe does are traveling just as much.
Yeah, I was listening to the Wired to Hunt podcast. They had Kip Adams from the QDMA on there, and he was citing the Minnesota Deer Movement Program study and mentioned that the does seem to have a similar dispersal rate as the bucks. So his concern was that we need to keep the pressure on the does as well and not lose sight of them.
Well, was it at the round table too? Were you at the round table, not this year, but the year before? And they showed some information from one of the tracking studies, and they showed a doe that traveled like 80 miles or something like that.
Yep. Yep. And as far as I know, that deer collar had still been working up to this year. But I haven't had an update lately, but yeah, it settled in at Cannon and I think it survived the whole deer season. So.
Interesting. Taylor Bester, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. He's a president of the Bluffalo Whitetails Association down in the southeastern part of Minnesota. You guys are pretty active in the fight down there, of course, and you have to be. What are others say? I know there's been a lot of talk last year. There was a lot of, there was a lot of talk about what Minnesota's doing versus other states across the country. It seems like some of that has died down. Have you noticed that too?
Yeah, well, I think our biggest thing as an organization is we saw what Wisconsin kind of went through, and it was everybody kind of fending for themselves, going against each other. We felt that if we could get out the most up-to-date, accurate information, that people would start to get on the same page and have a better chance at this. But yeah, back to your question, we've been kind of promoting a study out of Illinois where they compared how they were culling similar to us in Illinois but doing nothing on the other side of the imaginary line in Wisconsin. And the data is pretty alarming, as Wisconsin grew to 15% and Illinois is hanging around that 1% prevalence.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward data right there.
That is interesting. I hadn't seen that yet. But because Wisconsin really isn't doing much for culling anymore, are they?
Correct.
Yeah. Why was that decision made, you think?
Well, the way I understand it is that a bunch of hunters and maybe organizations grouped together to put pressure on the legislators to kind of take the DNR's power to do that away. Mm. And that's what happened when they had that earn a buck run for 3 years. Well, the data actually showed that that earn a buck was actually lowering the prevalence. So it's unfortunate that they only got 3 years of it. I guess what we won't know, you know, what could have been.
Sure. Hmm.
Interesting.
It is very interesting. It's something we're going to have to deal with for a long time. We could talk about chronic wasting disease for probably a few hours here on the radio show, Taylor. But let's talk about, what you're doing as an organization and how, you know, you're raising funds to do some of these things. Of course, you got the banquet coming up. That's in May. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's our 14th annual. We found a solid MC last year, so bringing him back, thank you.
I know that guy. He's okay.
we make a large amount of our annual income from this one banquet through, you know, 180, 200 people that support us through it, so that's nice. That's coming up quick. We got the deer show coming up at Canterbury, the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Show, and on March 3rd, we're having our first Antlers and Ales kind of pint night at a local brewery where people can come out, get to know us, talk deer, and give away some prizes.
When and where is that?
That's at the Little Thistle Brewery in Rochester on March 3rd. We'll start around 6.
Very cool. All right. And then you guys can have a booth at the Deer and Turkey Classic, the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic.
Yep. We'll be up there. It's a new venue, so not sure what to expect, but we do have Mike Sieve next to us. I think he's going to work on a painting throughout the show. So
cool. Nice. Well, and the Bone Collector guys are going to be there. Michael Waddell and Nick Mund, anyway, are going to be there this year, which I think is pretty cool. And I talked to Eric Meyer because I'm going to be there too. I'll be there Friday. That's March 13, 14, and 15 at Canterbury Downs' new location. And I saw Eric at the at Pheasant Fest this past weekend, and I stopped by and I said, "Hey, you know, how are things going with the new venue?" He goes, "Everybody's excited about it. And of course everybody is going to be excited about it, but it's, bigger space, more vendors, already more people signed up, I guess. So we're going to be there. I'll be doing an appearance at the Outdoor News booth on Friday, right as it opens from 1 to 3, and we'll be doing some filming for Prairie Sportsman there. And, what are you guys going to have at your booth there for that weekend?
I guess the goal for this show is just to, get everybody's vibe over the past year and, get some input where they want to,
so people can come out and talk to you about it then.
Oh yeah.
Very cool.
That's our hope. Swing by and let's discuss some stuff.
And, the banquet, daytime and location.
Banquet's in St. Charles. That'll be May 1st. It'll be at the Moose Lodge. It's about from 6 to 9.
Come out, the MC. I will be there again to MC it again. I'm excited to be down there to see you guys and be a part of it. And can we find some information online somewhere about all this stuff?
Sure. Yeah, best spot is our Facebook page. Search for Bluff and Whitetails. Otherwise, bluffandwhitetailsassociation.com.
Very good. Taylor Bester, appreciate the time here on Sporting Journal Radio.
Yep. Thanks again, Brett.
Sporting Journal Radio is a division of Macaba Media, LLC. Find us online at sportingjournalradio.com to listen to past shows, download the podcast, and more. And search for Sporting Journal Radio on Facebook and Instagram for outdoor videos, tips from the experts, and more. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for listening to Sporting Journal Radio. We'll see you next week.